previously.tv podcast network.
Typical writer. More funny on the page than in person.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 8, Episode 13, Comic Relief. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm sick. That's our site business today. So sorry if you hear me blow my nose, which you definitely will. I have a cold.
I'm glad that you got off your deathbed for this.
Yeah. Usually I also do if it's my week for pictures, I do that before we record too, but I didn't this week because I just cut the clips and went back to bed. And so I watched these like 2 weeks ago, so this will be fun. I probably don't remember anything about it anymore. Let's do it! Starting with our B plot, David befriends a gay, is too dumb to scheme, and also there is stand-up. So on the phone, Steve makes some vague promises to Carly about why she shouldn't worry about her whole childcare situation now that her mom is fucking off to Arizona. And Carly fishes for reassurance by saying she doesn't know why Steve doesn't just ditch her and find someone less complicated, but Steve insists that her responsibilities are not in the way for now. Okay, so everyone at the Walsh house is getting ready for work when suddenly they can hear Val squealing and bouncing bed springs, and Brandon is wondering whom she even has in there, and right on cue, Val is like, oh, David, but of course it's all fake. Val is kneeling on the bed, slamming the frame against the wall while he sits in a chair being typically useless, and she is annoyed that he is not participating in this ruse. He exposits that they already went through this whole routine the night before and that no one's going to buy it, and so... Then David comes down to the kitchen. Brandon and Steve are grossly celebratory, asking if he's walking bow-legged, etc. And David pissily says it wasn't like it sounded before expositing that he's about to start his new job at the car wash, and then comes out to be pissy to Donna about having slept there without telling her he wasn't going to be at her place. And she sadly says she was worried when he didn't come home, which is when Val comes flouncing downstairs to say she doesn't need to worry. David did come home last night. Donna is disgusted and dismayed. And orange. So David shows up at the car wash. Where the first dude he approaches is Chris Williams, Vanessa Williams' brother, who you may remember from such movies as Dodgeball or from his iconic turn as Crazy Eyes Killa on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Anyway, turns out this guy rules. Clip two.
How you doing? I'm David Siller. I'm supposed to be starting today.
Uh-huh. And what exactly am I supposed to do with that information?
Marry me.
Yes.
So Chris Williams tells David the idiot to punch in and gets back to work. Oh no, not more corporate rules. David hates those. And he's in the locker room looking around for the time clock when a kid comes in behind him and says that whatever David has in his hand is his. David apologizes and says he was looking for the time clock. This kid is also extremely unimpressed by David since, duh, it's right beside the door. Introductions are made. This kid's name is Ben. And so the Peach Pit After Dark, meanwhile, is putting on a comedy night because it's the late 90s and the stand-up boom was just starting to bust. Perfect time for the Peach Pit After Dark to jump in on the dying trend. Noah is running the auditions, and, like, why have we seen any evidence that Noah has a sense of humor at all? He does not like to laugh.
No. I mean, we like to laugh at him.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, the auditioner that we see as we join the scene is a guy styled like early 90s Jerry Seinfeld, but with the delivery of Dom Herrera in clip three.
I could never handle waiting tables. My last job lasted 10 minutes. Everything was great until I asked this lady if she wanted fruit or flies with her burger. That's my set. Fruit or fries, fruit or flies. You get it?
I get it. Next.
Yeah. So the next comic is a sad older lady in a fun floral blouse. And because it would be an interesting and surprising reversal if she was awesome, that can't happen. And it does not. And Steve comes in at this point and does his unwitting part to sell Val and David's whole thing by telling Noah about it, disgustingly, in clip 4.
Mallory been around yet today?
She should be. Why?
Well, I just want to make sure she's all right after last night.
Last night? Why wouldn't she be?
Well, I guess you didn't hear. Well, David and Mallory kind of crashed into each other.
I'll pass along your concern, okay?
Well, that might not be for a few days. She's probably still with the paramedics.
Funny man.
You could tell a lot about a person from the kind of pet they have. Dogs are like, no problem by me. But they just like lie there. I'm serious. Hey.
I'm funnier than that.
Roadkill is funnier than that.
Why would you say I'm serious? It's a stand-up act, lady.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, Noah recruits Steve to... Yeah, it's bad. Noah recruits Steve to appear as if Steve has the attention span to write one joke, never mind 5 minutes worth. Elsewhere, Donna admits to Kelly that she thought she acted adult when she saw David and Val back together, but that she was upset and assumes that Noah feels the same. And then it turns out Rob's car wash is not an inclusive workplace with stringent sexual harassment protections because one of David and Ben's coworkers smacks Ben on the ass. And they joke about him washing cars in a dress because it turns out Ben is gay and the fragile masculinity of the other dudes cannot handle it. And this week, David is a champion of human rights and sticks up for Ben. And of course, one of the homophobes suggests that it's because David is also gay and David just stares at him and doesn't say anything because it's David. And then Noah rudely talks through another comics audition to be snide at Val about fucking David, which she smugly brushes off. And then it's Steve's turn. Clip 5.
How's everybody doing tonight? Good?
Great. So, I'm taking these self-defense classes. After about 10 weeks, $50 a pop, the instructor says to me, "Oh, Steve, by the way, use this only if you get attacked." Yeah, right. Like you go to medical school just in case there's an emergency, huh? Hell no. I'm going to use what I know. I'm going to kick some butt. I said, "No tomato on my burger." Yeah! I don't think I'll be making that mistake again. I said, "My grandma, she made me these oatmeal cookies." I must have told grandma 100 times, "Grandma, I don't like oatmeal cookies." What? I don't think Granny's going to be making that mistake again. Right, Granny?
Why is this happening to us, Sarah?
I don't know.
It's not fair. It's not right.
Kept flashing back to like every single property that is a fictionalization of comedy, mm-hmm. which is like, it's you. You can't show people yucking it up. You just can't. Does not work. Even if it's funny, does not mm-hmm. work. Don't oversell it.
And these Please. Ones, like everyone's, all their laughter was way ahead of the actual jokes. Like it's not even synced up properly. It's bad.
Yeah, it's really not good. Although this was the first time that Vincent Young almost convinced me that he was capable of displaying an emotion besides cube poo. Mm-hmm. Not quite, but he was closer.
He's trying.
Yeah, very trying.
My patience. The next day, Ben thanks David for defending him, but tells him not to bother since he doesn't expect anything to get better. Because it gets better as many years away, I guess. Stupid David asks whether the owner has ever said anything, but apparently Vince's deal is dropping acid and chasing UFOs in the desert, which is possibly a callback to when David and Claire did that, maybe?
Oh, Claire. I remember her.
Ben doesn't really care about the guys at work abusing him, but volunteers that he's more concerned about his bad relationship with his homophobic parents who kicked him out. And David, who knows nothing about anything, just hand waves this, saying that they'll come around. Ben's dad told him that Ben destroyed his dad's life. Meanwhile, Ben is now living in the car wash and his mom did nothing. And Ben is prepared to live in a homophobic world, but he can't take his parents' intolerance. David to the rescue, sadly. We'll get there. At the Peachpit After Dark that night, Donna tries to cozy back up to Noah, but Val's dumb plan has worked, and Noah is obsessing about Val and David's canoodling. And then this trickles down to Donna, who ends up sitting with David at the bar somehow and bitches that she never should have let him back into her apartment. True, but not for this stupid reason. And she says maybe he should go live with Val, and he says he will. And then Noah and Val start the comedy thusly. Clip 6.
Can I have your attention, please?
Is this a comedy show or an assembly in the gym? What the fuck?
No. Hey, front and center.
God, hire an MC, you fucking nitwits. Anyway,
can I have your attention, please?
Brandon, don't be such a squeef.
Little peek behind the curtain. I'm currently drinking Neo Citron, Canada's most favorite lemony cold medicine / placebo beverage in my Don't Be Such a Squeef mug.
Can I have your attention, please?
Thanks so much for wasting your time.
Shut up, Dave. From what we saw of the audition, Steve is the only comic they thought was any good, which I guess is why he's their opener. He has a lot of energy, but no one in the audience laughs, including all his friends. Donna's watching Steve bomb faces, also hilariously mournful in the visual aids. And the jokes we already heard at his audition bomb, but then he gets into this. Clip 7.
Did you ever notice that when little kids get embarrassed, they always lift up whatever they have over their head? Like, little boys will pick up their jackets and little girls will lift their dresses way up over their head. I don't think we ever should have stopped this behavior as adults. Say you're a chick looking for a job. You go into the interview, just lift the dress up over your head and say,
I want this job, I need this job.
It's just a theory. May not be true, but don't blame me if it works. I was in New York City recently. Man, cops sure are different there. I mean, they don't care how fast you drive in New York. You could be doing 50 miles an hour down Fifth Avenue with a beer between your legs, a seatbelt hanging out the window, running all these red lights. If a cop sees that, he's going to say, bring me a donut on your way back, would ya? It's much different here in California. I got stopped the other day in Beverly Hills. What's the problem, officer? You're right, speaker's out.
People stand at the end of this, like, no.
No. No, just really no. Like, none of that is, I mean, observational comedy should be accurate. Mm-hmm. I just don't get it. Let's just get through this because okay. It doesn't get any better.
No, it doesn't. So then David takes it upon himself to go over to Ben's parents' house. Like, we have no idea how he possibly would know where they live, but he tells Ben's mother that he works with Ben, and she recoils as we hear a man's voice from inside asking who it is. And she starts panicking that something has happened to Ben. By this time, Dad has made it to the door and he's still got his tie on and all the way done up as he demands to know specifically why David is there. And it seems like it never occurred to David that they might ask him that. Clip 8.
Well, I came to tell you that
Benjamin needs a great many things, I'm afraid. Most of which you might be better suited to help him with.
Hey, wait a sec. Wait. Don't close the door. Look, I only met Ben yesterday, all right? I work with him. But that was long enough to realize that he's in real trouble. I mean, he has nowhere to go and no one to turn to. Your son is in pain. He's in real pain.
I don't have a son.
Okay, it's bad enough when they have these storylines and try to make us think that Brandon cares about any person other than himself, but, like, giving the storyline to David is absurd.
Oh, God. I mean, first of all, you should be glad your son isn't David, I think, is Ben Sr.'s actual takeaway from this. And he's like, I don't have a son. Furthermore, I'm relieved that my non-son is not you. Like, just go get Ben and be psyched that he's not this, like, fucking seven sail wearing douche.
Seriously.
Who, when you're like, I don't know you and I don't need to listen to your shit, like puts his hand in the door and is like, don't close the door. Like, you're on their property, bitch. He can yeah. do, he could close whatever he wants.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, like when in the Simpsons episode where that with the lemon tree, when Bart takes off his wig and is like, it's me, Bart Simpson. And everyone's just looking at him like from Springfield. Cause no one in Shelbyville knows who he is. Like, same thing. It's like David thinks he's going to put this over by letting, you know, as soon as Dad figures out he's in the gang, like, oh, okay, never mind. This yeah. is important then.
And then how is I'd only met Ben yesterday a good argument? It's a yeah. terrible argument. You oh, are terrible.
Terrible. He's so in over his head. Speaking of the comedy night, though, which we have to get back to, Brandon is reading a rave review of Steve's performance, which even Steve has enough journalistic ethics to say they can't print. And this is where we learn they have more than one freelancer and that this fucking suck up wrote a rave review of Steve's performance. Like, really, dude? Anyway.
Big Homicide fan?
Well, we'll get there. Spoiler, but Brandon tries to defend this the decision to publish this, like, not as a joke. Brandon is all suspicious about why Steve is so insistent on not publishing it. Like, it should be obvious to you, editor. And Terry only weighs in to say this, clip 9.
So, it's true what they say about really good comics.
What do they say about really good comics?
They're extremely self-loathing.
Maybe, but I don't know what that has to do with Steve. But I'm bummed.
Try the veal. It's delicious.
So it turns out the material that worked is shit he stole from a Richard Belzer album, as he interminably confesses to Carly, along with the fact that he plagiarized Brandon's term paper the previous year. And he goes on to continue telling her what a slow learner he is, using original examples that crack her up. And he realizes maybe he could deliver an original set after all. Who cares? This is not yeah. his destiny.
And what? We never saw it again. Thank God.
God, I hope so. So at the Peach Pit After Dark, Val casually tells Noah that David is moving in with her. Enter Donna as Val leaves, and Noah starts pouting about her kicking out David. Donna thought that Noah would be happy and challenges that what he's actually upset about is that David is now going to be living with Noah's ex. Donna needs to know if Noah is still into Val, and he answers by kissing her with way too much tongue. It is gross. On to the A plot. Oh good, Kelly's feeling herself again while Emma tries to feel Brandon. So Brandon sorry, but she does. Brandon fishes a compliment from Kelly about Emma's first beat column. She wants to know if Emma is this smart and funny in person, and Brandon claims she's typical writer, more funny on the page than in person. That would not be hard. And then Kelly fishes a thank you from Brandon for suggesting that he recruit Emma, which she should. Finding talent is supposed to be Brandon's job. And then Kelly leaves before she can see Brandon getting all tense and sweaty, talking about his secret crush, but then comes back to ask if she would like Emma because she feels like she knows her from her column. And Brandon is so bad at lying. Clip 10.
What does she look like?
She looks like a girl. No. Just looks like a normal girl.
Ah, oh, a normal girl. That's a vivid picture. Men never pay attention to anything.
She's a good writer. That's all I care about.
She is a great writer. You know, Brandon, I would really love to meet her.
Just fuck her already. You're honestly acting like you did. It's so obvious.
Also, how hard is it to say, I don't know, she's short, she's got red hair, it's in one of those stupid Chicago bobs, whatever.
Yeah. Or just be like, actually, she's really handsy. I think you'd probably hate her. Like, problem fucking solved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alas, we are not getting there today. Donna shows up at the Walsh house to beg Kelly to fill in for a model who got mono, and even though Kelly only started working at the clinic like 2 days ago, she has no concerns about asking for the afternoon off because, after all, she is Kelly. So when Kelly goes in to request that afternoon off she totally deserves, she walks in on Dr. Monahan yelling at someone on the phone. Clip 11.
Fine, it's all my fault. Oh, look, rationalize it any way you want. Look, I am not going through this again. It is over. You'll see the doctor in just a minute. You know, I have to get back to work.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're really getting backed up out
there. No, I'm sorry. I'm the one who should apologize. It was just... my wife. I'll be with you in just a minute.
So, first of all, this is an incredibly cliched setup for whatever Dr. Monahan's whole deal is, but... What bugged me even more than that was that Kelly's like, okay, and then immediately launches into her request for the time off. Like, he said he needed a minute. But.
and then from there, oh my God, like he just keeps talking about his wife and how they're not connecting and things have been wrong for a long, long time. And Kelly keeps being like, so about the time off and like, I'm sorry to hear that. We have patience. And it reminded me of, in a recent episode of Extra Hot Great, the Real Housewives Cannon's mission, and Luann de Lesseps just being like, I can't believe how mean they were to me. And this other lady's like, my dad's dying, bitch.
Yeah.
It was that, but much longer and boring and annoying. Just leave the, just be like, I'll give you a sec and leave the office. Leave the door open. Always leave his door open, Kelly.
Mm-hmm. You said that they're at the Walsh house, right? At some point.
What's that?
You mentioned the Walsh house moments ago.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Is this the same Walsh house that's always been the Walsh house on the show?
Yes. Yeah.
So they were there. The parents were there for what? Like 3 years before they left?
5 years.
Okay. So they're for 5 years. Assuming they didn't buy it outright, which I don't think they would have the means to coming from Minnesota to L.A., who's like continuing to pay for this house?
Yeah, we don't know.
I believe the situation is they tried to sell it. It fell out of escrow.
Right, that's right.
And then the senior Walshes are still in Hong Kong, and I think everyone who's living there pays like the mortgage in rent.
Okay.
That's true. They do talk about rent. Okay. Steve tried to pay it on his Amex.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, Dr. Monahan tells this boring story about his bad marriage forever and keeps getting into Kelly's personal space, and he's a creep. Brandon then elsewhere meets with Emma to try to get her to write a series of articles, and she flirts that she doesn't know. She's really busy. She should say that she's going to wait to see if the Beverly Beats check actually clears first, but what she does say is this, clip 12.
But I'm open to persuasion.
Based on your phone call last night, I'd say you're open to a little more than that.
I am. The question is, are you?
About your articles.
The ones you're going to persuade me to write over lunch?
Lunch?
Well, I have to drop off a freelance piece at Buzz Magazine. Shouldn't take very long. Shall we say half hour? The Natural Gourmet?
Sounds good.
I'm feeling persuaded already.
To drop it off in person? It's 1998.
No, really.
Anyway,
also, Buzz Magazine, whatever. shut up.
She just printed it on her dot matrix Oki data printer, and she's going to drop out of that Buzz Magazine. What?
Wasn't Buzz Magazine where the person was from that was going to write up the Peach Pit After Dark? That was the scenester in like the leopard coat that was hanging out with Val?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Nice continuity again. Kelly enters at this point, introductions are made, and Emma manages to keep it in her pants, having apparently guessed Kelly's relationship to Brandon, and she leaves. Brandon wriggles out of lunch with Kelly by claiming to be too busy, when in fact he's going to be too busy hiding the boner Emma gave him under his desk before meeting her for lunch so that she can give him another one. And sure enough, when Kelly calls the beat from her dressing room, Terry tells her that he's not back from lunch yet, and Kelly is shocked. Clip 13.
He went to lunch. I thought he had a lot of work to do.
I'm sure. One of the perks of being boss is that he just can dump it on me.
Terry! Terry!
Run, Terry!
Free Terry. And at this said lunch, Brandon pretends it's a business meeting in clip 14.
You'll have complete freedom. Not a single word of yours will be touched.
But if what? I need a sounding board, you're available, right?
Absolutely.
Day or night. I tend to get a little inspired after hours.
Why do I get the feeling that every conversation we have is about something neither of us is saying?
Try something you aren't saying. I say what's on my mind.
My mind's on business.
Is that right?
Lady business.
85%. 75%? Would you believe 50-50?
You're cute. You know what?
Wrong.
Something tells me you might be able to convince me.
Seriously?
Well, having said that, the business half of this lunch is now officially over. I would like to get on with the other 50%. Are you free the rest of the afternoon?
No.
Jesus Christ, like, if you are going to, you know, have the little fig leaf of business over this, could you just do some business, please? Mm-hmm. Like, make her sign something.
Shout out to the Foley artist in this scene who decided, what are they having, tea or something? Here's my moment to shine. What if instead of making the Foley seem like there's two people having coffee, there is 12 people having coffee at the beginning of the scene? What was up with
that? And then fucking Priestley picks up the coffee cup by the rim. Hate you.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the visual aids again.
Look, Jason Priestley knows a lot about coffee and donut culture. He created a whole Timbit flavor by himself.
Well, what was it called?
That's a good question. I'll look it up while you guys talk.
Was it called the Beverly Bit?
Oh, I wish. I don't think it was.
Don't get up. I'll fire myself. Gladly.
Also, like, no one ever gets to tell a writer, we're definitely going to print whatever you give us without editing it. Like, that's not how it works.
Yeah, no, that's not how anything works.
And if you were a writer, you would find that alarming. Like, oh, you're not even going to check it for typos? Okay. Like, what?
Yeah, I just, ooh.
Anyway. Later, Brandon still has not returned Kelly's calls, and she's all tense about it just as the photo shoot is about to start. So Donna has to assure her that there's no way Brandon would ever cheat on her so that Kelly can get on with the job Donna is paying her to do. And here, meanwhile, is what Brandon has been up to, clip 15.
Sorry, I was too busy looking up the Timbit thing.
I had a really great time.
So did I.
Shopping on Melrose, botanical gardens in Pasadena, sunset on the beach.
All of which were your idea.
Because she's a tourist? What the fuck even is that?
That's also a lot of driving.
Yeah, I was going to say. All right, well.
You're leaving the botanical garden in the middle of the afternoon to get to the beach for sunset? No. Also, the idea that Brandon would have any interest in a botanical garden is hilarious. But
or that meanwhile, she would, unless it's filled with Venus flytraps. I really doubt she gives a shit about the botanical garden.
Great point.
Sorry.
Brandon could have maybe said he has to get back to work if he's bitching that all of that was her idea. Like, Steve is not there either. Free Terry. Anyway, Emma wants to know if their business/pleasure ratio is still 50-50 as she leans way in and he says 70-30 and then they kiss. She invites him in and he says he wants to, but he can't. And I guess Brandon still has the capacity for guilt because after a commercial, it's the next morning and he is bringing Kelly waffles in bed. She was already asleep when he got back the night before, so he asks her about the photo shoot and she passive aggresses that it was fine except for all the calls she made to him and he makes his shitty, shitty face. You know the one. And she also lets it be known that she's aware that after telling her he was so busy, he fucked off for the whole afternoon and night. And honestly, if this was Terry's play to get fired and collect severance, I respect it.
whatever it takes, Free Terry. Mm-hmm.
He lies that right after she left, he got a lead on a story and was chasing it down all day. LOL. Kelly is obviously a better journalist than Brandon since she knows how to ask a follow-up question. Clip 16.
What was the story about?
What?
What was the story about?
Oh, it was about a civil court judge downtown who's allegedly involved in some cult. Why?
Burn. I couldn't get a hold of you. And I don't want to doubt you, Brandon. I'm sorry.
Doubt him. Doubt him all day. Even you are better than this.
I mean, first of all, this motherfucker lets her apologize to him and then pacifies her by promising her a date, which is to see Steve do stand-up at the Peach Pit After Dark. What a treat. A. B.
Second prize, two dates.
Honestly. Ooh. But, can we just leave these idiots alone and go follow the story about the judge and a cult? Because that sounds interesting.
Yeah. And in fact, it's probably based on the family, and you should listen to The Blotter Presents.
Yes.
We cover it.
I have a Timbit update.
Please.
Oh, yay!
It originated on How I Met Your Mother, apparently in a Robin,
oh, that's right, yeah.
Robin Sparkles plot of some sort. Mm-hmm. But then it became real, in a sense. Jason Priestley stuck a chocolate Timbit into a vanilla strawberry-filled donut. Mm-hmm. And then Tim Hortons, sensing free press, created that, called it the Priestley.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think it had wide circulation, but at least it existed in a small batch for social media's sake. And then sure. They tried to milk it further later in the year by Jason Priestley being the judge on a Canada-wide Tim Horton Create Your Own Donut Flavor Contest. So,
oh my God, was he the shelf on which the winners put their trophies?
And
I remember that episode now. It was like a behind the music kind of thing. So there was like an interview with him as one of Robin Sparkle's former colleagues.
Yes, including Alan Thicke, Geddy Lee, Stephen Page, some Alex Trebek, Paul Schaefer, and others. Yes,
right.
Jason Priestley. That's it.
All right, back to this show. The next day, Kelly's back at work where Dr. Monahan finds the Polaroids from the photo shoot and perves on how hot she looks in clip 17.
Actually, come on, you wouldn't have brought them to work if you didn't want someone to see.
Well, they were in my purse.
Hold it. Just a few more.
I would like them back.
Well, now that's an expression I've never seen on your face before.
I said I would like them back.
Relax, Kelly. I always knew there was another side to you. Too bad you're wasting all that beauty on a younger, less experienced man.
He's right and yet wrong and yet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's pretty much what my notes said.
So at the Peach Pit After Dark, Brandon actually notices that Kelly is upset and she tells him it's because Dr. Monahan has been making comments and he is very understanding and sensitive. JK clip 18.
Well, last you mentioned, you said you'd overreacted.
I thought I had, but lately it's gotten worse.
Sexual?
Yeah.
How much worse?
Oh, it's nothing terrible. It's just I don't know how to deal with it, you know?
You got to call him on it, Kel.
You think I should report him?
No, I think you should call him on his behavior first. And then if it continues, then, yeah, I think you should file a grievance. Ugh, I can't believe this guy.
You know what? Let's not let it ruin our night, okay? It's not worth it.
You'll talk to him.
I promise.
Look who suddenly the pillar of rectitude about appropriate behavior in the workplace.
Very tiny pillar on which we've placed a potted plant.
So then Emma shows up at the club and Brandon has to intercept her before Kelly sees that she's there. And Emma also busts Brandon for not having introduced Kelly as his girlfriend, even though it seemed pretty clear in the scene where they met that Emma knew who she was. But Emma then shows up at the beat the next day at the tail end of an editorial meeting, clip 19.
We're just dealing with a little situation here.
20 minutes to press and 20 inches of blank space. That's a little situation.
Poor Terry. Her scenes really stress me out.
I know. She always just looks so baffled by these boneheads mm-hmm. that she works for / has to bail out on an hourly basis. Ugh.
Meanwhile, just to remind us all, he fucked off for a whole afternoon and then spent the following night out on a date when this was the state of his issue. I hate him so much.
Yeah. Also, if what you need to get those column inches filled, inches, is to fuck Emma, then just fuck her already, since that's what you're clearly planning to do. Mm-hmm. You're just telling yourself you're not going to. Like, oh, we're just hanging out. It's daylight. Whatever. Like, paper first. Get the column.
Well, fortunately, Emma has shown up to drop off her latest column, which they now have 20 minutes to typeset. And I guess Hope isn't libelous since Brandon has promised her never to edit her. And it's about two timing men. Great. And Kelly shows up at the clinic, which we're supposed to think is mad busy all the time, even though these two seem to have plenty of opportunities to dick around. Anyway, she takes Dr. Monahan aside and gets right into it in clip 20.
While I find your work here admirable, I have very little respect for you as a person. I will not stand for any more references, however subtle, to my sexuality. I know that you're having problems at home, but I don't think that I'm the person you should be sharing these things with. I find it very inappropriate, and it makes me very uncomfortable.
Are you accusing me of sexual harassment?
I'm just telling you.
Inappropriate? What a joke. You have a problem working with men, Miss Taylor? Since you're so easily offended by what is obviously adult conversation, I suggest you go get a job at a nursery school instead of a street clinic.
I mean, her degree is in child psychology, so maybe she should, but whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, I thought that was a good speech, but like, have another person in the room, perhaps. Like, he runs the clinic, but there are obviously people further up in the foundation that probably should be involved.
Yeah. Also,
but we'll get to that.
Don't be like, I have no respect for you as a human being. Like, just be like, I'd like these comments to stop. Okay, thanks, bye.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, not to victim blame, but Jesus, this show, get a grip.
Seriously. So later, as she's in bed with a very distracted Brandon, we find out that she has learned all the wrong lessons from recent events in clip 21.
I decided not to take the modeling job. This whole ordeal with Monahan has really made me realize that I don't ever want to trade on my looks.
What? You weren't trading on your looks.
That's what... Okay.
And, like, that's literally your job as a model. That's not, like, you're trying to get away with something. What the fuck?
Also, the money's a lot better than trading on your intellect. Dumb shit.
So true.
Trust me. So, yeah, whatever. Shut up, Kelly.
Brandon is, of course, still a moron in our final clip.
Even after the girl that Emma's writing about found out that the guy she fell for had a girlfriend, she still wanted to pursue him.
That makes her kind of a homewrecker, don't you think?
I don't know. Maybe she and this guy really have something, something that he and his girlfriend don't have. And maybe they shouldn't be together.
How do you suppose the guy and his girlfriend know if they actually have something or not?
How do you know?
I don't know, I just know.
Well, there's your answer.
Hello.
I miss you.
Hello?
Kelly's there, isn't she? Lying right next to you.
Hello?
Right where I would be. Crank.
Must have been.
Joke's on us, though, because this shit's not over. Please kill me.
Oh, my God. Like, really, him? He's your quarry? He's the one that you're expending all this energy into getting a leg over? Him?
And he's really short. It's not that hard.
No, it's
like
not.
3 inches off the ground. Your leg's over.
All right, let's wrap it up. Who is our MVP? Sarah.
Richard Belzer. Got the laugh, didn't have to go on the show.
Yep.
Well done, Munch.
That's pretty good. I mean, I hate to give it to the homophobic dad just because he yelled at David, so I won't. But I don't know.
Terry?
Yeah, Terry. Thank you. Terry, the only person holding the Beverly beat together along with like spit and paper clips. All right, least valuable player. Brandon.
Yeah, Brandon.
If you're going to do it, just do it. Quit faffing around. And if you're going to try to deceive someone, get better at deception. You are bad at it.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, we have a user submitted challenge.
I scored some amazing stones.
At K_Nana on Twitter asks us to list 5 ways Noah is a worse Dylan than Dylan. Well, for starters, he can't laugh.
True. Dylan would have farmed out these auditions to someone else to go surf.
Mm-hmm.
Smart. It's important to delegate.
Dylan would have definitely not cared who Val was fucking.
And didn't. Dylan at least originated the hair looking like the front of the Sydney Opera House instead of just carrying it way past its sell-by date.
And Dylan knew that if you need a place to live, you get a house, not a boat. That is dumb. That makes 5.
Next time on Again With This, Brandon... Barf. Next time on Again With This, Tara is dead. Brandon does some freelancing of his own, and I am legally obligated to disclose that means there's a sex montage. Yet more proof that there is no Santa, though the gang tries to convince Zach and Noah otherwise, and David's pants could easily double as Saint Nick's sack. I'm sorry I just said sack. You'll want to put coal in our stockings when you get a load of our visual aids, which for this and every other episode are on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv, and you can follow this very podcast at AWT90210. I am veritable torrent of flop sweat, Sarah D. Bunting. I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Endless Prank Call, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is less experienced man, David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.